Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda.
And this is Sam.
Today, we are back to talk, to answer questions about sexual shame. Not just sexual shame, but some of you all are like struggling with sex in some capacity in your personal life, in your relationship. And we had some great questions that we wanted to answer that we think a lot of you all will relate to.
You got them? Got them queued up?
I do. I got them queued up. All right. I'm 28 and I've never had sex. It's not for religious reasons. I'm not saving myself. I don't think I'm asexual. I just feel like I missed the window. In high school, I was anxious. In college, I was focused on grades. And now I feel like I'm so far behind. The shame is paralyzing me. I feel like I can't date because if it goes well, I'll have to tell them eventually. Or when do I tell them? Do I wait until my clothes come off? The thought of explaining that I'm almost 30 with zero experience makes me want to hide. My friends think I'm just picky because I've turned down a few people who were interested, but they don't know the real reason. I know you'll probably say that the right person won't care, but it feels like it's been so long. How do I get past this shame spiral when everything in our culture says I'm weird?
It's wild how we're so trained to assume that sexual shame is from people who have quote unquote too much experience. Mm-hmm. But I actually think the shame is worse for people that feel that they don't have enough experience. Yeah.
I don't know if one's worse than the other, but I think the lack of experience is not talked about at all.
I think that person hit the nail on the head when they spoke about how they're afraid to even open up to their friends about it. Mm-hmm. They don't even want their friends to know. Because I think sometimes we'll tease people. Like,
oh yeah.
Lovingly, mm-hmm. if you can lovingly tease, I think that's a conversation mm-hmm. we could have for another day. But, you know, it's hard. Like, it's so vulnerable to talk about at a baseline and then to admit it feels like there's this club that exists that you're not a part of. Mm-hmm. That's really, it's very challenging to navigate those feelings.
Yeah. And I think it is something that you can so easily just when you are in a friend. Like, it's such a weird thing. Like, when do you bring it up even to like friends either? You know, it's like people are all talking about having sex and you have to be like, hold on, just wanted to let everyone know I'm a virgin, right? Like, I can completely understand how someone would just not say anything and not saying anything and not say anything. And then it feels weird to say anything, even not in a romantic relationship, even just among friends, because it is so widely assumed that, of course, you've had sex, at least in like modern circles. I would say maybe it's different in like more, you know, like religious circles. But yeah, I think it must be so hard to feel that shame and feel like you don't even have a way to bring it up or talk about it.
Yeah. Or to like, I think even if maybe people haven't had like intercourse, they've experimented in other ways.
Yeah.
And if you feel that you have no experimentation, mm-hmm. like that's – it does feel limiting, especially like the yeah. older you get where the assumption is like most people who are looking for partners are like, oh, I'm assuming the person I'm with is experienced.
Yeah.
Right? And will maybe know certain things or mm-hmm. know how to do things or will understand the language that I give when I explain what I like in bed mm-hmm. or what sexual intimacy is like for me. Right? And it can feel really daunting to feel like you can't meet up to that language. Yeah. And I really want to validate that concern because I don't think it's talked about mm-hmm. ever because we're all mm-hmm. afraid to be honest about that.
And I think we're so hyper aware of women being shamed who mm-hmm. are more hypersexual, which isn't even a great word because it like acts yes. like there's the correct amount. Yeah. But right, in a lot of things with women, there has to be the right amount for no shame. Like there's a lot mm-hmm. of situations where, right, if you gain too much weight, it's bad. If you lose too much weight, it's bad. If you look too well done in terms of like your makeup or, right, you're mm-hmm. a try hard. But if you're not trying hard enough, you don't care about yourself. Like there are so many binds, I think. And whenever I think about that, I'm like, oh, it's just like – this is a thing with being a woman compared mm-hmm. to even a specific thing. You can zoom out and look at it as like, this is the patriarchy.
Right. It's exhausting. Yeah. Like that's the only word that can come to my mind. And even when you were reading out the question and I was kind of like keeping note of the parts I wanted to address, it just feels – I guess maybe like my first initial thought beyond everything I've just said is that like how unfair it feels that we even have to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like that this person can feel so behind over mm-hmm. something that like categorically – isn't an indicator of anything in your life.
Yes. Yeah.
Like it doesn't mean anything. It's simply like a human experience.
Yeah.
Like that's mm-hmm. really what it is. And I think the most difficult part of it is like, yes, there are some basic mechanics that you can figure out very easily, yeah. but much of the events surrounding it are yeah. very much learned.
Yes.
And what scared me at times was like the performance aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the feeling yeah. of like you're on display. I think it can feel like that. And the assumption is that that is what it is going to be. So I think first of all, to get back to this person's question.
Yeah. I was like, do I have any advice?
I don't know. I don't know. I think if I could like speak to this person directly or yeah. anybody listening to this who feels like they relate to some degree with this of like mm-hmm. not feeling experienced enough or just feeling insecure about sexual performance in general. I think for starters, with your friends, to just get used to communicating about it is the best place to start, I think. And to pick a friend who you trust the most. I don't want to mm-hmm. say you have a hierarchy of friends, but I think everybody kind of naturally does, of people that you would go to for different things. And so you don't have to announce it like mm-hmm. on the group stage. You don't have to be at brunch and, you know, hit your glass with your knife and be like, everyone, help
I have
me.
An announcement.
I have never had sex. Like you don't have to do that. Start with just one person and yeah. practicing verbalizing that. And you can tell them beforehand, like, look, I need to practice having a really difficult conversation and I just need you to like hold space for this. Like, I don't need advice. I don't need you yeah. to like fix it. I just need you to kind of like model this conversation. And I would be hard pressed to think friends wouldn't be accepting of that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think especially like female friendships, I think most – like I would – weep yeah. with joy if my friend felt vulnerable enough to come talk to yeah. me about that. So that's where I would start.
I think that's a really good point because I think that we have to think about practicing the conversation, like you said, working through the shame little by little.
Yeah.
And I do think like on one hand, part of me is like, who cares, right? Virginity right. is a social construct. Yeah. You don't need to tell anyone. You don't need to do anything. And I think that's true. And the problem is we exist in a world where this shame already exists for you. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I know that I also hate is that like shame does thrive when you don't say anything and it gets yes. worse and worse. And we know one of the most effective things you can do to break down shame is to share with someone because it's very hard for shame to remain intact when you're met with compassion and understanding. And we can't, to your point, Sam, we can't guarantee that someone you're going on a date with will have that correct reaction,
right.
that supportive reaction. So let's practice and let's get some experience with mm-hmm. having a positive reaction to it and being supportive. And I think so often like we just make things so much bigger
yes.
in our heads, mm-hmm. especially when we're not talking about them.
Your mind plays tricks on you of like how blown out of proportion
yeah.
something is, or how significant something will be, like, yeah. as you're saying. And in terms of, like, the sexual partners,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I think, one, you do not have to go into a first date, like, ready to bear all. Like,
no.
In fact, that is deeply inappropriate to do so.
Yeah.
You are allowed to have a boundary, whether you have had like 400 sexual partners
yep.
or whether you've never had one. You are allowed to say, I take my time before mm-hmm. I'm sexually intimate with someone.
Yeah.
Like before I have sex with someone. Like you are allowed to take as long as you want with that. And yep. in fact, having that boundary out the gate and seeing how that other person responds mm-hmm. and respects that boundary or responds to and respects that boundary is a huge indicator of whether or not this is someone that you could feel safe with
yep.
as a partner and as someone who you are going to have to be vulnerable with in bed. Like
yep.
at some point in a relationship, you are correct in the question that you will have to address this at some point
yeah.
with this person. However, maybe like going in with that boundary up front is what helps you gauge if this is a person that you could in fact feel safe with
yeah.
to let them know that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not just the right person won't care. I think it's the right person with the right amount of time will be the best bet for setting yourself up. Because I think by the time you get to know someone and someone's really interested and you do have that connection, I don't think it will matter. But just giving someone that blanket thought or prescription can feel really flat given mm-hmm. what everyone is – like what this person is going through. And I think I would be – I would say this person too, like you are right. You're in yeah. like a much more difficult position than other people. And it
yeah.
it sucks. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't matter this much. Unfortunately, that is the way our culture is.
Yeah. I think one time Todd Barrett's.
Yeah.
I think he said in like an Instagram carousel that he was like, if you're struggling to build sexual intimacy, just hire a sex worker.
I mean, like, it's not a bad idea.
Like, kind of brilliant.
We should have him like, on the podcast.
Oh my God, I would love to talk to him. He's
yeah, he would definitely
brilliant. And also to this person, look up his Your Dyad Nonsense and his Substack is
yes.
Unfiltered
with Todd, I think.
Unfiltered Love.
I let think me look.
Maybe. I would to anybody who's listening, I would recommend it like 10 Ways to Sunday. It is a fabulous resource, I think, for anybody who is
unfiltered real talk.
That's what it is. We were both wrong.
Yeah.
Unfiltered real talk. It's he has such fantastic mm-hmm. insight and content over there, and I think that could be a wealth of knowledge for mm-hmm. you to kind of like just dive in and really figure out how you want to approach this on your own.
Yeah.
And make the decision that feels best for you.
You could also see a sex therapist. Yes. They're awesome. They're great. They are trained to not be scared of any conversation
anything.
At all, which is wonderful. So it could be really healing to just be in the presence of someone
yep.
who is so comfortable, or even your own therapist, hopefully, if your therapist – I mean, most therapists should be comfortable talking about sex or not sex and all of this stuff. And if they're not, yep. go get a new therapist. But like yeah. bring it up with them yep. if you have one. That can be – I think people really discount the healing properties of just saying something you're afraid to say to someone mm-hmm. and being met with like compassion and understanding. It can be more healing than we expect.
Yeah. And I think even along those lines, I think sometimes too the recognition that sometimes you actually don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
even in opening up about it, like you don't have to do anything.
Yes. But and telling someone is doing something.
Yes.
So like good for you for reaching yes. out to us. That yes. is that is a good first step.
Yeah, that was huge that you wrote to two strangers on the internet and were like, please answer my question. Like that's very vulnerable for you to yeah. have like typed that out and sent that to us. And so absolutely, that is a fantastic first step. So just keep trying. It's hard.
Yeah. We love you. If any of you have questions, you can reach out to us on Instagram or you can email us at podcast@therapyforwomencenter.com. Let's get into our next question, Sam.
Please.
My husband and I fight about sex constantly. He initiates, I say no, he gets mad, and then we won't talk for days. The more he pushes, the less I want it. I can feel him wanting it all the time. Every hug, every touch, it feels suffocating. Sometimes I just do it to avoid the fight, but then I feel gross after. He can tell when I'm not into it, which pisses him off too. I feel like I can't win. I used to want sex with him, but now it feels like a chore that I have to do. His anger about it makes me want it even less, but he doesn't get that. What do you think I should do? Okay, so if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out. I have a lot of thoughts about this question. I think Sam and I will both have to separate ourselves probably from, right? Like, there's a version of me that is mad on your behalf and gets it. And then there's like the more evolved therapist version of me who can back up and look at this. I think the first thing I want to say is libido changes being different in a relationship are extremely normal. And I, again, think we don't talk about it a lot. It is very like a lot of times the amount you want to have sex when you're dating, when you're engaged, when you're married, when you have kids changes a lot. And I think some people can get very stuck on – I'm curious if this person has children. I don't know. But a lot of times like when you have young kids, it is very difficult to have sex. A lot of times women specifically are not as into it. There are hormonal changes that happen. She may not feel comfortable with her body. Sex can be painful. Like, I would love to ask, is sex painful? Because I also think that's something that we don't talk about at all. And I don't know what the statistics are off the top of my head, but sex is painful for a lot of women. And please, please go to a pelvic floor therapist who can help you if that's the case. But I think the challenge is like navigating libido differences, because I think this person did a good job of describing a very common situation where the more one person wants sex, the more pressured someone else feels, and the more someone doesn't want it and kind of resists it. I think we have to start looking at, you know, communicating what our expectations are, and also really understanding that, you know, explaining to him that it, the irony of it is this, is probably you guys both would rather have a more fulfilling sex life, but the more he pushes, the more you don't want it, the more you pull away, the more frustrated he gets, and you guys are both getting farther and farther away from what you want.
There has to be negotiation in it. And yeah. I think that the clients that I've worked with,
yeah,
that seems to be like the sticking point a lot of times, mm-hmm. is the fear of like asserting our needs, yes. within the sexual dynamic in the relationship and being clear on like, look, I get you're ready to go 25-8.
Yep.
Mine hits me when the wind is coming out of the west and like yep. the stars are aligned and it's just hard for me right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I think that is – that's a very vulnerable place for women to put themselves, because there is that fear of like disappointing your partner, of letting your partner down.
Yep.
But then in not communicating that, we're almost guaranteeing that that happens, because
totally
they're left in the dark and they don't know. Like,
yeah.
Right. And so they're just like, why am I being rejected? Why am I being rejected? Mm-hmm. When it's not you rejecting them.
Yeah.
You still love them. You're still attracted to them. You still want them. You just don't want them right that minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, I think we can get like, I think people can get fussy about the word negotiation, and we're mm-hmm. not saying like, just push yourself to have sex with him. We're also, I think one thing that trips people up too is like intimacy can also look different.
Yes.
Right? Like men often think that intimacy is just penetration. And it might look like, especially if you're coming back from a place of being more sexually disconnected, it might look like really, especially too, when I've worked with people that have different libidos, it's really like, rather than it just being a chore and the woman is just sort of suffering through and we're trying to just get it done. And then, you know, no one who's like suffering through sex is going to then look forward to sex. Like that that is a downward spiral that you can see a mile away. So instead it's like, okay, if we take the pressure of having sex is the bar, what sort of touch or intimacy would you like?
Mm-hmm.
What would feel good to mm-hmm. you? Is it holding hands? Is it kissing? Is it, you know, doing like other things? What feels good for you? And trying to focus instead on some sort of intimacy rather than just having the goal be sex.
I had a client one time who was like almost struggling with this exact thing of like this, yeah, this complete disconnect of not wanting it, but they hadn't fully communicated that to their partner, but their partner was wanting it. And there, yeah, was like all of this like shame and guilt in the middle from the both of them. And we drilled down through all the layers, but the thing that I reminded them was, hey, like making out is intimacy.
Yeah.
Like making out and just kissing and just cuddling is intimacy. Yeah. And I think like it is almost impossible to go from like zero to penetration.
Yeah.
Like men can to a point do that. Yeah. But for women, that 0 to 100 is a long gap.
Yep. Yep.
And there's a lot of things that have to happen. And I think I remind a lot of women, like, it is that initial, like, I think what some men would classify as like foreplay, right? Yep. That can create that desire.
Yeah. 100%.
If that is never present, you're never going to feel in the mood because you're like, whoa, why are you coming at me? Like,
yeah,
please. I just finished the dishes. Like, yeah. Leave me alone. Yeah. But if there is like cuddling and stroking and touching and holding and kissing and, you know, cute little words to each other, like, mm-hmm, that is what builds that reminder of like, oh, I like this person. Yes, I want to be with this person. And so I love that you brought up that negotiation isn't this like, we're going to write a contract and it's going to be the sex treaty in our marriage.
Yeah.
It's about like actually having the conversation of like, what does sexual intimacy look like, mm-hmm, in our relationship or our marriage?
Yeah.
Like, what are the expectations? What do we both need?
Yeah. Or even, right, like if you're in a situation where like both people are separately masturbating, it's, yeah, like intimacy could be you guys just sharing it with each other perhaps.
Yeah.
Or maybe he tries to get you off or he,
right,
watches you masturbate or something like that. You can do things like that as well. Just really thinking about it as intimacy and pleasure and, mm-hmm, even just what kind of touch feels good. Because the other thing that I keep thinking about is a lot of women never learn,
no,
what feels good. A lot of women, right, sex is just like painful and terrible. And
well, it's, may, yeah, I say, it's male centered.
Yes, yes.
The, yeah, pleasure of the man is centered.
Yep.
And so we forget that we have a voice, yeah, in that equation and that there are an endless list of ways, mm-hmm, to, mm-hmm, be sexually intimate with your partner that go far beyond penetration. And might I add, might be even more connective, mm-hmm, than that. Sure, yeah, like in some instances, like penetration might be the end goal because that's how your partner has to finish. But like it's all of that stuff like from the beginning to the end, mm-hmm, that creates like confidence and vulnerability, mm-hmm, in the relationship.
Totally, totally. One of my favorite resources, there's a book from Emily Nagowski called Come As You Are.
Mm.
And it's phenomenal. And she talks about this concept of, for women, it's not just that women need to be turned on. It's that women actually need to have their turn offs also turned off.
Please. So if you think of it,
yeah. So if you think of it like a car, right?
Okay.
In a car, yeah, you have a gas pedal and you have a brake.
Right.
Women can't just have a foot on the gas pedal to be turned on. They also have to have not a foot on the brake.
Mm.
Right? If your feet are on both, on the gas pedal and the brake, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
You have to have – to be turned on and to be interested, you also can't be turned off at the same time.
I see.
Yeah.
I see where
you're
going.
This is very unique compared to men.
Yes.
Who have like a much easier ability to get turned on. And especially for women because of cultural things, because of our bodies. Like a lot of times women objectify ourselves. So we have a lot more turnoffs a lot of time that are like sometimes completely unrelated to our partner. Like it might be that we don't think we look good or we, yeah, may not like for a lot of people, like if your body or bodies together make a certain noise, right? Like,
yeah, yeah,
people can get super turned off and not want to do anything. So yeah, I love that book. I think that is such a great recommendation. She also has a workbook that like can help you identify what your turn-ons are, what your turn-offs are. And I think it's really important. A lot of women just like are not comfortable with their bodies, mm-hmm. never have had time to really get curious about what they like or what's interesting to them. And I would hope, my God, that if you talked about this a little bit with your partner, that they would be interested in sort of exploring this with you and starting with some of these, right, foreplay or different types of intimacy and seeing where it leads.
We're having a very different conversation if you are met with resistance on
this. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Hate to break it to you, but
yeah.
I think if you do hit some resistance to those conversations, it's okay to pull back and kind of reevaluate why there was resistance there.
Yeah. And I think for some men, right, it can be shame of I think they feel like they need to have sex a certain amount to like be a man and what's expected and all of that stuff.
Or they're embarrassed that they don't know what their partner wants or realizing that they didn't know.
Yep, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, regardless, I mean, I think couples therapy is always wonderful if you want to go to a lot of sex therapists or couples therapists also. But yeah, I think I think one thing that people forget is like when you're in a hard cycle with your partner, one of the best things you can do is talk about the cycle without talking about the thing. Like talk about how you guys are getting into a disagreement about this. And it's sort of a way to talk about it without actually having to get into the nitty gritty. And you can kind of like set up some game rules of how you're going to actually deal with it when it does happen again. And it can kind of desensitize you to talking about it before you have to like make a decision kind of.
I like that a lot. I think that's that's like a really like powerful way to say like there are a lot of ways to have this conversation, basically. Like you don't have to just go straight to the center if you don't feel safe enough yet to go to the center.
But yeah, I think I just also want to say like you're not alone. I think libido mismatches are extremely common. If you're with someone for a long enough time, you are guaranteed to have a libido mismatch pretty much at some point. It's always about just like communication, working through it, and learning how to have productive disagreements essentially.
Yeah. And I think too, just as you were just saying, essentially just like normalize that you're in a different season of your life. And I think even going back to the first question, your season is just as valid as this person who has had so much sex, they're sick of it. And don't even know if they really want it that much anymore. I think wherever you are on this path is valid because that's just the human experience. And we're all starting at different places and spaces. And if you want to know more, do more, great. Spend some time like focusing on that. If you actually want to do it less, figure out how to incorporate those conversations in your partnership. And maybe make like the moments that you do come together even more meaningful, like, and having a quality over quantity conversation as well.
Thank you guys for tuning in today. We hope this episode was helpful.
As always, please rate, review, subscribe. Anything that you can do to get the word out about the pod is so helpful to us. We love reviews. We read every single one of them. So if you could go leave one on either the episodes on Spotify or if you listen on Apple, you can just comment on our page. We love that so much, and it means so much to us.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Bye.